And welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, where instead of Sam Mulvey, you get me, Becky Friedman, and Justin and Josh with me in the studio. How are you guys today?
Doing very well.
Doing good.
I assume that you're doing good because, let's see, one more week. It's graduation season. I've got one more week until my little children go away for the summer. And all you moms and dads out there, especially dads, happy Father's Day. Dads out there, get your kids for the whole summer. Ha ha. And let's see. So that's a 1 week. You're about to be graduated as well, Josh, right?
Yeah. I should be getting my master's in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. So that's been some hard work for you. Yes?
Yeah. No, I'm definitely excited.
And let's see. We got another countdown going. We got 2 weeks. Do you guys know what's happening in 2 weeks?
Camp?
It is indeed. Camp Quest Northwest is still accepting volunteer staff for session one, which is June 29th through July 6th. It'll be held at Camp Waskowitz near North Bend. And those experienced in photography or health and first aid are especially encouraged to apply at campquestnorthwest.org. You can come hang out with me and Sam and a gaggle of other awesome campers and other volunteers. If you've been a listener to Ask an Atheist, you know that we love Camp Quest. We love Camp Quest Northwest. We love our campers. We love our families. We love all of our volunteers that spend that week with us doing awesome free thinking activities in a completely non-religious, sectarian, non-sectarian environment. No cell phones or electronics for our kiddos either. So it's a time to disconnect. Yeah, definitely.
I do not approve.
Oh, do you not approve? So we're going to be out in the woods doing a lot of different, hiking and fun science activities. It's loosely based on a Star Trek theme. So we're going to be doing some Star Quest. I'm especially excited because this summer is actually the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. So I'm excited that we're incorporating a space theme into this year's fun and learning and things
like
that.
All right, fine. You talked me into it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we just tell the kids cell phones didn't exist when we had to land on the moon. So, you know, cell phones don't have to exist for this 1 week that we're at camp. And Josh, you've been with us before at summer camp. And I mean, it's one of the more rewarding things that I do. And, you know, in terms of volunteering. And I think you feel similarly.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a good experience, especially for the fact that it gets you out of the current atmosphere. Like, it's a good way to separate yourself from what's going on in the world.
So not only the kids kind of unplugging, but we as volunteer staff and leaders are kind of so busy keeping up with the kiddos that we get a little bit of a disconnection as well, which can be really excellent. It can also be kind of interesting because, like, I remember when Obergefell became, you know, the ruling came down that legalized marriage equality throughout all 50 states. And, you know, and it happened while we were at summer camp. And some of those kids got dropped off at summer camp with their parents being considered and regarded second class citizens at the federal level and in other states. And when their parents came to pick them up from camp, their parents were no longer considered second-class citizens because they had all the equal rights that men and women who were married to each other had. And it was kind of this, like, magical moment where, yes, we disconnected from the world, but something in our world changed and happened while we were engaged in this, you know, outdoor nature camp.
Yeah, I cried when that ruling came down.
Yeah, it's like one of the few positive things that have come out in the Supreme Court in the last decade.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that we'll be able to have an assurance that we'll continue to have those kinds of rights, where you have the majority is protecting the rights and privileges of the minority to be equal to that of those who have experienced these privileges and rights for, you know, for a long time enshrined in law. Because even with these kinds of steps forward and even with these magical transformative summer camp experiences, not everyone gets to have those experiences, which brings me to something that happened that's gotten a lot of news focus, both nationally and locally. But it is in Washington, where a Christian summer camp in Bellingham has fired a counselor just before the start of the season after camp leaders discovered a social media post of the young man and his boyfriend. Jace Taylor had attended the Furs summer camps as a child and teen and had described it as a second family where the director had watched him grow up. Taylor also stated that the camp had made him feel loved and accepted by God and Christ. Director Tom Beaumont released a statement saying that it was critical that the Furs hire people committed to the camp's mission and statements of faith, which include the belief that marriage is the covenantal union between one man and one woman, and that the Christian standard is faithfulness within that marriage covenant and abstinence outside of it. Lawyer Denise Diskin, who has a pending Supreme Court case based on LGBT employment law, said that religious employers can only require an applicant to be of a certain faith to apply for a job. So it seems in this case that Jace seems to be of the Christian faith. He uh-huh. says that this is a place where I was brought close to Christ. You know, there's no indication that he's an atheist. He wanted to continue being a part of this summer camp. And to me, this seems like a violation that they said, we're denying you employment because you're gay, as opposed to we're denying you employment because you're not Christian.
Well, I think it depends on the way that this particular denomination of Christianity defines what their faith is. If they're defining their faith as the standard of only heteronormative relationships and heteronormative marriages, then that would be what their faith is. And then even if Jace calls himself a Christian, if he doesn't abide by those standards, then he's not their kind of Christian.
Well, the strange thing also is that it says you're going to be married to a, you know, if it's Jace, he would have to be married to a woman and be abstinent outside of a marriage relationship with a woman. Unless they investigated Jace's activities with his boyfriend,
right,
and unless Jace specifically revealed that he was engaging in sexual activities or non-abstinence activities with his boyfriend, I don't see him actually in violation of their mission.
Neither do I.
And I don't think that it's your employer's business, whether they be religious or not, to investigate your personal bedroom activities.
Yeah,
I really wish that was the case even for religious employers.
Yeah, the term by itself, religious employers, just doesn't sit well with me at all, because it's like it's an intersection of God and capitalism that I'm just not happy about, as it leads to things like this.
Tell more of this intersection between God and capitalism, Justin, that makes you so disquieted.
Okay, well, it comes down to ideas about power imbalances, right? So this Jace Taylor guy, Josh, you had said before the show that this guy sounds like the kind of employee that any organization.
Yeah, no, he's a great student. He's loved by the community, by all stretches of the imagination. He would be a great employee.
Yeah, but one thing
that does not cause harm. Like, you cannot demonstrate that this is harmful in any way. Yeah. It's just against your magical thinking.
It makes me feel really, really bad for Jace. Like, I feel terribly for that. I disagree with him about his faith. Apparently, this guy is a devout Christian. So I would probably argue with this guy all day about religion. But you don't get to... Like, I would go from arguing with this guy about religion, and then someone else tells him that he can't have this job because of his bedroom activities, and then I'd be arguing with them.
Be arguing not with Jace. Jace, you and I are on the same team, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you can't do that to people. It's so... It's They're basically calling him not a Christian, not their kind of Christian. So they're taking all of that away from him, which is wrong to do. And then they're taking his financial situation away from him. So that's kind of what I mean with the God and capitalism.
Because this is a guy who just graduated high school. He's 18. Yeah. It could be, you know, like a first paid job as an adult.
Right.
This is what he was planning to do this summer. And now the bottom falls out from under him. Yeah. I mean,
they're hurting him emotionally. They're hurting his faith. And they're hurting his finances.
I do want to say you feel horrible for him. Mm. And I do in this circumstance as well. He's gotten a tremendous outpouring of support from the community.
Good.
His parents, when he said that he in social media has, you know, talked about how he struggled with his sexuality and then he came out as gay, his parents were extremely supportive of him. One of the reasons that this really hit the media is because his father posted to social media that his son, who was an upstanding young man, was being discriminated against and had his heart broken.
Yeah, that was something else there. I saw some people when this story got posted complaining about LGBTQ folks just popularizing this kind of thing for attention for themselves. Jace didn't make this point. his father made this point.
I don't even care if they're popularizing for attention. There should be attention paid to this.
I mean, they're popularizing for attention so that way they get equal access and rights. It's all it comes down to. They're not taking anything away from these Christians. They just want to be able to participate in
that's
society.
That's kind of my point.
Yeah.
Because like even though he would, Jace would be in the right to make hay about this, he still
didn't. I mean, and his protest is peaceful. He's not calling for any kind. He's just literally
He's protesting attention to it.
I'm glad that you bring up the protest, because since he's gotten a lot of media attention for this, he has planned a June 24th protest, and that's kind of the start of the camping season. Mm-hmm. And he explicitly says this is a peaceful protest. I want anyone to attend that wants to, or I welcome anyone to attend that wants to see change at the Furs company policy. This is not to scare anyone. It is solely to bring awareness that LGBTQ plus members should not ever be discriminated based on their sexual or gender identities. And, you know, since then, he's posted to Instagram and Facebook and things like that, that, you know, calling for change to see equality in the workplace for LGBTQ members. And, you know, saying we really need to support those who are being discriminated against and stand up for them. And I think that that's a really powerful place that a young person can, a powerful voice, whether they be religious or not, that a young person can have this platform and say, you know, we need to end this kind of discrimination. And he's found that empowerment through his community and family support, whereas in other places, a young person might be discriminated against and can't post to Instagram saying, hey, we need to fight for equality.
Right.
So I think the attention that he's bringing to it, whether it started with him or his father, is really important. And just because he is raising awareness and attention doesn't inherently mean that it's bad or able to be dismissed. I don't think it should be dismissed.
No, it absolutely should not be. It's the same kind of apologetics you see around other kinds of things. Like if they can't criticize the point that they're making, they'll criticize the way they made the point.
That's that tone policing kind of thing,
right?
So one thing that it really brings to mind is something else that happened this week, and that's a judge in New Jersey ordering an organization that promotes so-called gay conversion therapy to minors. They were ordered to dissolve again and pay around $3.5 million in fines. In addition, co-directors of the Jewish Institute for Global Awareness, or JIFGA, Arthur Goldberg and Elaine Burke, are permanently banned from leading any nonprofit or tax-exempt entity in New Jersey. The organization, formerly known as Jews Offering New Alternatives for Healing, or JONA, had been shuttered for fraudulent practices, only to be reincorporated under a different name. A UCLA-based think tank estimates that more than 700,000 Americans have received the so-called therapy meant to change their sexual orientation or gender identities, a practice which the vast majority of medical, psychological, pediatric, and psychiatric associations reject as ineffective and extremely harmful. And the reason I think of this is because had Jace been raised without a supportive family, he may very well have been subjected to this kind of torturous practice as a minor. And New Jersey has taken the step to say, we don't want this happening. And the way that we're going to outlaw it is by recognizing that when you pay someone to change your sexual orientation, that person is committing fraud because they are accepting money for services
that
can't be provided. That's fraudulent. I think New Jersey has a brilliant way of addressing this.
No. I hope that it gets extended out a little bit too, because I mean, the thing is, the U.S. allows a lot of fraud just to happen, just because it's a kind of just business as usual. So you have snake oil salesmen to this day. You have the essential oils market that's complete garbage, and we're talking about billion-dollar corporations that are defrauding the public. And I would like to see all of these to go the same way as these conversion. These conversion clinics go, because they're defrauding the public. Yeah.
They definitely are defrauding the public, and fraudulent business practices are already prohibited in all states and at the federal level. But I think you're right. It's not enforced. We still have fraudulent practices happening. You know, more local to Washington, we actually had in the last legislative session, Senator Patty Murray, along with Representative Ted Lieu from California, they introduced twin bills that were they co-sponsored these federal bills that would classify conversion therapy as fraud at the federal level. That, of course, where did it go, guys?
The Senate, where Mitch McConnell killed it because he's the reaper of all good legislation.
So died in committee, right?
Died in committee.
And we've got in this past April, actually, Sean Patrick Maloney, who's a representative of New York, who he also happens to be gay. He reintroduced the prohibition of Medicaid funding for the Conversion Therapy Act. It would have prevented the use of Medicaid funding for, quote, reparative or ex-gay treatments.
Yeah.
And this was super surprising because it's saying, wow, we actually have to make a law that say that Medicaid, our federal dollars, don't go, or the state dollars aren't used to pay for this bunk practice?
Some of the problem, I think, with the enforcement angle of these kinds of things comes down to standing. Because, like, while we know that these quote-unquote therapies don't work and that they are fraudulent, we wouldn't have standing to sue on someone else's behalf under that framework. It would only be the victims of the therapies that would have standing to sue because they're the ones who are being defrauded. Yeah. Whereas with Maloney, if it gets qualified as fraud and the use of Medicaid funds is barred, then it wouldn't be shutting down the business. You just wouldn't be able to get the Medicaid funding. And then if the Medicaid funding still went through, then the government's being defrauded. And then the government would be able to sue on fraud.
And then,
For fraud.
We should have standing because I'm a taxpayer. And that means my tax is going paying for Medicaid. And therefore, it's being used for fraud.
There's an argument.
I think there's my standing right there.
I think also when you have an individual, right, there are individuals that have been harmed and the state attorney generals can sue on behalf of them. Similarly to how Arlene's Flowers, the individuals who were denied floral arrangements because they're gay, they didn't initially say, let's bring suit against Baron L. Stutzman. It was Attorney General Bob Ferguson, who brought that because it was people acting in a business capacity who were out of concordance with our state law. Mm-hmm. And so your attorney generals in your states can also have standing to sue.
So we have to make sure that people who care about this know to call, write letters to their state attorney general's office so that the attorney general knows that the people of those states want them to pay attention to this, and then we get action.
And there are enough people. There are 700,000 Americans that have received this kind of therapy, this kind of, you know, junk practice that isn't grounded in any kind of psychologically sound or psychiatrically sound or behaviorally sound practice. I think that it's really atrocious that this is still happening. I think that we have still more stuff to say on this. But you're listening to Ask an Atheist, where you can find us at atheist.radio and listen to any of our episodes at any time. We'll be back after the break to, dig through this so-called gay conversion therapy a little bit more.
Seth Olapod is lying to you. Her mind-reading glass thingies are stupid. They don't do anything. Seth Olapod is a creepy stalker / eavesdropper and is creepy, and she just randomly popped up in camp when we were talking about UA Gold. Be on the watch for that creep who's stupid. Don't buy her crap and waste your gold. Did I mention she was stupid? Don't trust her. Don't buy her crap. Don't even talalk to her. She will find you, stalk you while you are asleep, and kill you.
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. Cephalopod is not real.
I know.
Hello and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Before our break, we were talking about the so-called gay conversion therapy treatments, and I put that in heavy, heavy, heavy quotes, that have been at least outlawed for minors in several states, but most recently New Jersey, where you have this organization that just reincorporated and is still under the radar, as they think, under the radar, still practicing these atrocious practices. and got slapped with a big fine again, right? Nope. Just because you change your name doesn't mean that you can still harm minors by telling them that they can change their gender identity or sexual orientation. Yeah. And, you know, when we look at what are these things we say that psychiatric and psychological and medical associations have said, have rejected this, condemned it, said this is not medicine, this is not behavioral health, this is not promoting any kind of well-being, and in fact being exceedingly damaging, say, well, what are those kinds of practices? And I've read a book called Coming Out Straight. It is by one of the proponents of these so-called, realignment of same-sex attraction, right? Mm-hmm. And he is a therapist, and he's a testament to his own realignment of his same-sex attraction and elimination of his same-sex attraction disorder, which isn't a disorder, right?
And
talks about his wonderful marriage to another formerly converted lesbian, right? So he says, look, both of us had same-sex attraction disorder. We went through our therapy. Now we are married and we have kids. And I just, my heart hurts for this person, but not to the extent where I'm going to sympathize with him too much, because he's promulgating this idea that it can happen. And the absurd kind of practices that are listed in his book as like a how-to of both his personal achievements and then how to replicate it with others involve ridiculous things that are not supported by behavioral health clinicians or anyone in medicine.
And reality.
Reality, right? And, you know, it's, you know, involving sort of rebirthing where you hit a pillow pretending that they're your mom and dad because apparently it's a mom and dad's fault for making you gay. So if you just tell your parents how much you hate them for making you gay, then magically you'll not be gay anymore. I mean, when you have that kind of like breakdown of a relationship between parents and someone who is struggling with their gender identity or sexuality, parents are the ones who are needed in order to provide that support. So,
yeah.
You know, I just look at these kinds of practices and I can't help but say, why can't we see that on their face they're fraudulent?
Yeah. I had an experience where I was arguing back and forth with this guy who was a Christian, and he wasn't specifically advocating for conversion therapy, but he was absolutely defending it. And
like, in what sense could you defend that kind of thing? Is it a kind of a live and let live? That's their culture.
No, well, he was a Christian. Was the thing. So he was engaging in all of the arguments that a Christian would use to defend this kind of thing. He was all over the map. There wasn't any consistency to his points, and I just kept knocking it down. And this conversation between me and this other gentleman, who's actually someone that I went to high school with, went to high school in Florida. And I'll take your thoughts and prayers.
How many manatees did you hit with your jet ski?
I was too poor for a jet ski.
Ah.
But I was in the back and forth with this guy who was a Christian, and it was on a mutual friend of ours page. And it got a little bit heated between me and this guy, because I know that what he's saying is nonsense. I know what he's saying is hurting people. And I'm not going to just stand by and let somebody say some hand-wavy nonsense while people are being harmed. You don't get to not look at the mess and the pain that you're helping create and defend. So our mutual friend, the one who I was actually friends with, he reached out to me. He asked us both to, like, calm down, be nice, be cool. There's information on both sides, that kind of thing. He's a good old boy. He means well. And he reached out to me in a private conversation, and we had talked about it a little bit more. And I won't say his name, but I said to him, hey, you know, do you understand what is actually going on here? Like, what is actually involved in these quote-unquote conversion therapies? And I gave him some information about what those conversion therapies were, and he was shocked.
What made him so shocked to know these?
The examples that I gave him. And like, what you're talking about, that the, what's the guy's name? The therapist guy coming out straight, that author?
Richard Cohen.
Okay, there we go. Thank you for that.
So the kind of, I sent him some information, I can't remember specifically, this was a couple of months ago, but I sent him some information about what kind of therapies get recommended, and I was like, here's what that really is, what that actually looks like. And he's like, this is weird. What is going on here with this? And I'm like, yeah, sometimes they electrocute people. And he's like, what? And that was one of, he just didn't know. He didn't know what was being what was involved there. So he was willing to say both sides because he didn't actually know what was what the other fella was defending advocating for.
That's so annoying. Just the fact that like, people will get into the middle of an argument without actually having any idea what they're arguing for.
People have jobs.
Yeah, it's like, I just, you know what? I'm just going to be the mediator, even though I don't understand either. Yeah. I don't know who's right, but I'm going to assume that they're both wrong.
Right.
Equally.
Right.
Just off the fact that I'm me and I don't agree with either of them.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of a good idea to try and calm your friends down a little bit, like at a base level. But I think that's one of the things that we have to do.
Understand that both sides aren't, it's false equivalency. Both sides are not going to be equally wrong.
But we have to tell people why it's a false equivalency because they might just not know.
Now, I think one of the things you referenced is really important because there's lots of documentation about sort of these reorientation camps.
Yeah.
And they're not necessarily things that specifically say we're going to convert your kid from being gay to not gay. Mm-hmm. It's we're going to treat in a Christian way your recalcitrant rebellious teen.
Yeah. And this is why, Josh, people don't know about it because they dance around and they use all this coded language.
Yeah, right.
In these shady terms. That's why nobody knows what they're actually doing. You got to break it down for them.
You know, a lot of us were kind of introduced in popular culture to these like summer camps and retreats through But I'm a Cheerleader, right? That little popular movie where you have a kid and her parents think that she's gay and she says, but I'm not gay and I'm a cheerleader. And then ends up going to this summer camp where all of these gay kids are forced to basically play house in heteronormative ways. And it's just very funny and awkward. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you have these places where children are sent off, teens are sent off. They have their communication with the outside world completely cut off, and the parents are told that it's for the child's good. We have documentation where children are locked in outside, dirt floor barracks in isolation, lights on for 12 days in a row, being piped in with sermons for 18 of those hours. They receive, electroshock therapy, things like that. They have to do hard manual labor, and as if that's going to then realign something that isn't harmful or in need of realignment in the first place. And I think that when you dig deep into those through the coded language and you see what it is and you see that this is based in what they defend as a religious religious doctrine, it's terrifying. And I don't understand why all 50 states have not outlawed these kinds of practices. We see in states where these camps and retreats are outlawed, the owners of these places bounce to another state with more loose laws that allow these kinds of things to happen.
Even worse than that, there's actually instances where they actually kidnap children and take them out of the country.
And that's kind of terrifying.
That's massively terrifying.
So one of the pop culture references that we have is, like you said, But I'm a Cheerleader. And I think there was another movie that came out recently. There was Girl Interrupted. It was a very recent movie about gay conversion therapy, or it touched on gay conversion therapy. And we have these kinds of things that are sort of, they're fun and entertaining, sometimes informative. The reality of these places is a horror show.
Yeah, no, it's torturing, trying to torture the gay out of somebody.
Yeah, and some folks just don't realize that it's going on.
So I want to get at the root of where do these ideas come from, that this can be something that cures, so quote unquote cures people from being gay. And for that, I bring us to Knox County, Tennessee, where a detective who gave a June 2nd sermon to his congregation calling for the killing of LGBTQ people won't be fired from the sheriff's office because the sheriff fears an onslaught of First Amendment lawsuits. Grayson Fritz's sermon to his Independent Baptist congregation went viral after being uploaded to YouTube and reviewed by local news and the county DA. Fritz referenced his role in law enforcement and called for federal, state, and county governments to arrest, try, convict, and speedily execute gay people, or even those found merely to have a cell phone photo of themselves participating in pride events. Sheriff Tom Spangler offered Fritz a sick leave buyout and will keep him off any active policing duty until July 19th when Fritz leaves the department. Spangler argued that the department looked at every avenue they could without violating anybody's freedom of speech and did the best thing for them in light of the ACLU and the freedom of speech people being all around ready to file lawsuits.
Would the ACLU be on his side of this, do you think?
You know what? I don't know in this case because it's the ACLU definitely files on behalf of people whose free speech rights are being infringed upon.
Yeah, they've defended KKK before.
But the rights to have their parades. But they don't specifically protect the KKK when the KKK calls for the extermination of Jews.
Well, and in this case, the ACLU might just really decline to take up this detective's case, right? The ACLU can be discriminating with what it wants to sponsor or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is something that's unsettling to me. He said, you know what? I'd rather just make him all go away. Let's give him his vacation time. Let's have him buy out. He's just on paid sick leave until he leaves the department.
All right.
To avoid the lawsuits, because we think that if we keep him on, we're going to get sued by people. And if we fire him, he's going to sue us. So let's just make it all go away with a bit of money.
It's not going to go away. They're basically subsidizing his pastoralism or whatever. Basically, because that's what his next step. He's going to become a full-time priest.
Yeah.
Preacher, whatever. And
I can kind of understand the sheriff's perspective a little bit, because if this guy is about to get out of there on July 19th, what would happen with if they fired him with a free speech? If a free speech lawsuit was filed against the department, that would go on for years,
especially in Tennessee.
Yeah, and that there would be a good argument to not do that in order to be a good steward of the public money.
Okay.
That's a fair point there. But I would say that there's a very big difference between, when we're talking about things in terms of the freedom of speech and freedom of religion and expression, association, etc. There's a really, really big difference between not being allowed to have his sermons, which nobody is saying. Like, we're saying he's wrong. We're not saying he's not allowed to have his sermons. And we're pretty much lockstep against this guy.
And we're using our free speech to point out that he is
wrong
and bigoted. Right. So, I mean, we're having...
And but there's a big difference between us saying that, for example, and then the Knox County sheriff saying that he can't have his sermons, because that would be like a government action against a religious belief or practice. And there's a difference between that and him not being able to be a cop anymore. Because being an officer is him being in a position of public trust, and if he has these opinions where he's advocating for the murder
of 10% of the population,
citizens,
yeah,
he's like, that's what this guy's doing. He's a cop who's advocating for the murder of citizens,
and presumably he would do this by doing things like, you know, putting them on trains, putting them in camps that are concentrated. I mean this sounds all familiar. I mean
indeed, when you look at his actual congregation, his All Scripture Baptist Church states that they are an independent, fundamental, King James Bible only, soul-winning church, and it goes on to say that don't expect anything liberal, watered down, or contemporary here. You know, we listen to parts of his sermon, and he says that the biblical law of Leviticus is still in effect. It's not outdated. That's how the civil law functioned during the time of the Hebrews in the Bible, and that's how it should be functioning now.
And he's an authority figure, so yeah. That scares the living bejesus out of me.
He's a dual authority figure, because he's in as part of the state, right? He's part of the county, right? Part of the
enforcement,
right?
Like literally the pointy end of the stick.
And then he's got a congregation of people that he's trying to bring to his ideology.
Right. The other thing is that these things can be pointed out because now we have YouTube and they get shared.
Mm-hmm.
But we have Baptist preachers that have been preaching this stuff forever, for a long time.
Yeah.
And now that they're awful ideas are being brought to light, they're claiming persecution. I'll give you three guesses as to the topic of his sermon where he stated all of these things. Any guesses, guys? Huh?
Oh, boy. Loss of culture?
That was one of the themes. Okay, talked about that, right? Because the gay people are taking away all of our culture. Any other guesses?
Can I just point out that the gay people are not taking away our culture? They're giving us a better culture.
Yeah, it's an alternative culture. I mean, I would hate to live in a society.
It is our culture. Just, yeah. We've always had gay people. Yeah.
I'd hate to be in a culture where it's like, you know, one culture only, then you cannot get away from that culture, that you don't have other perspectives of culture.
Well, his theme of this particular sermon was persecution. Not persecution of queer folks, persecution of the Christian people that want to stone people to death for waving a rainbow flag.
Well, to be fair, he didn't say stone people to the death, but then again, he is a believer of the King James version of the Bible that calls for stoning.
Sorry, speedily execute. Is that better?
He's calling for the state to be much more efficient in their carrying out of these things.
He wants to use some kind of like gas? What some kind of...
Well, he just said speedily execute.
I mean, I'm sorry. He's a Nazi. This is a Nazi.
So one of the things that came up and really piqued my interest was... Now, I'm a public employee in the state of Washington, and in order to retain my license to practice as a teacher, I have to abide by state law that says I have to be someone of good character and moral, good personal fitness and moral character. So I can't have been convicted of any crimes and things like that, which makes sense, but I also can't have any behavioral problem which endangers the educational welfare or personal safety of students, teachers, and other colleagues within an educational setting. So if I were preaching these kinds of things, and that's my outside of work activity, and I said these things, this would endanger the welfare and well-being and personal safety of people I worked with. And I would say that would be grounds for me to lose a license, a professional license. So we dug a little bit and looked to see what kinds of things a deputy or a detective within Tennessee or within Knox County would be held to. What kind of standards, what kind of personal ethics do they have to be someone of good moral character and personal fitness in order to continue practicing as a detective or as a police officer within that setting? And I think that after the break, we'll come back to what his code of conduct actually says. But in the meantime, you're listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. You can find us at atheist.radio and tweet us, Ask an Atheist WA. We'll be back after the break.
This is a warning made by the team Hot People.
Squid Ink. It is a lie.
For example, the last day.
Hey, kid, wanna buy some squid ink?
Sure.
They never saw that kid again.
Notice, do not listen to Squid Ink salesmen.
Ever.
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. Cephalopod is not real.
I know.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I am Becky Friedman, your host for today, and Justin and Josh and I were talking before the break about this pastor in Tennessee who also happens to be a police detective, and sort of that conflict of the bigoted, awful things he is saying in his congregation. Not only bigoted and awful, but downright violent. Call for governmental violence and execution and slaughter of more than 10% of our population. Because he says that anyone that even has a photo of themselves participating in a pride event should be arrested, tried, and executed according to Levitical law, outlawing homosexuality.
But it would have been done legally.
and there's a difference here between like the freedom for him to express what his genuinely held religious beliefs are is one thing. Like, we're saying he shouldn't be a cop at the same time. And that's what you were talking about before the break with the code of ethics, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So in Knox County, we looked it up and it said that in order to fulfill the requirement of being an employee of the county, you have to have personal characteristics such as honesty, courtesy, dependability, sobriety, industry, and the use of sound judgment. Okay, so that's for all employees in all classes of work in the county. And there shall be no activity in which is in conflict with the interest of your official duties. And you cannot use your position with the county for private interest. Now, let's just look at the conflict of interest thing. If you have an activity that you do that's in conflict with the interest of your official duties. Your official duties as a police detective is to
protect and serve,
protect,
supposedly.
Serve.
Right?
Follow the law.
And you think that the law should be to round up queer folks and put them to death? And that
queer
should be...
Queer folks and their supporters.
Yeah. And put them to death? I think there's a conflict of interest right there.
Yeah. This is the, as he is standing there as a pastor, his congregation knows that he is also a cop.
Oh, he'll because he off. Only mentioned it like 18 bazillion times within his hour-long sermon.
He will... This there's zero difference here. Just picture this for a second. You have a crazy person with a crazy sign preaching hate on a street corner someplace, and you walk past them, and then you, like, I don't know, drop a cigarette butt or an apple core outside of a trash can, and then that person puts down their sign.
Oh, and writes you a citation for littering?
Takes off their shirt, and underneath it is a police uniform, and they're, like, enforcing a law against you. It'd be like, what the heck is going on here? Who let this happen in the first place? is my main question.
So my question also here is, the sheriff who is not firing this pastor, this pastor detective pastor man,
bad but understandable reasons.
So he says that, you know, because all the free speech folks are going to come after us. But here's the thing: you have a code of conduct that all county employees are required to abide by. You also, you know, you have to have characteristics such as honesty. Well, I guess he's being honest about his beliefs, but courtesy, right? You got to have courtesy. I guess you can't be rude.
It's a courtesy of a sort.
Yeah,
I guess let's look at that. Like, if you say that, you know, I don't know, this lesbian citizen within my county should be stoned to death. Yeah. I don't think that's very courteous.
You said that you're a state employee. Is there anything that's similar to this in your line of work?
Well, yeah, for my moral fitness, I can't have things that endanger my colleagues, the personal safety and welfare of my colleagues, based on behavior that I do, even if it's outside of the official duties that I have as a teacher. We have a lot of professional organizations that have those codes of conduct, and we have it enshrined in, like, legislative statute. So what I'm thinking here is the sheriff is saying, I don't want to risk free speech, you know, and First Amendment lawsuits. What I'm looking at is someone gutsy enough to say my religious beliefs are being infringed upon by having to abide by a civil code of conduct in secular law and government that says I can't have conflict of interest, that says I have to, you know, promote equality and be courteous even to people that I don't like based on my religious grounds? Like, would this guy, if he got fired, be gutsy enough to say that my free speech was infringed upon and that the entire code of conduct is a violation of his free speech? That's a thing that scares me.
He probably would try it because it would feed his persecution complex.
And being Tennessee, it'd probably be a standing argument.
Yeah.
I think that this is something that when we look at our placement of federal judges, that when we look at our SCOTUS, justices, this is the kind of thing that we look at when we say these are religiously zealous individuals that are prioritizing someone's sincerely held religious beliefs to the detriment of things that have been there to protect legitimately persecuted individuals.
This is why elections matter.
This is absolutely why elections matter. Oh, I get a little heated about this, right? Especially because it's at the forefront. I'm looking at people that are youth or people that are legitimately persecuted with violent actions that someone is calling for their death. And someone is going to say, oh, well, that's a sincerely held religious belief, and so he can't be discriminated against that. And to me, that is garbage. That is absolute garbage.
Yeah. The sincerely held religious belief thing always bothers me, too, because it's like, I don't doubt that these people believe what they say they believe. When someone tells you who they are, believe them.
Well, and
the first time.
And then I'm glad that we are free to also believe that his beliefs are abhorrent and dangerous and calling for the outright extermination of individuals. So I want to bring us a little bit closer to home, where we have a Seattle-Tacoma kind of thing. We've made a top 10 list. Did you guys know that? We're top 10?
We are post-Christian.
Yes. Oh, see, I thought it was going to be initially for, like, you know, top 10 places where we have the most pets. We have the most fitness. We have the most people who go hiking. Nope. Apparently, we're post-Christian.
We have the most microbrews.
We may be all of those things, but the Christian polling firm, the Barna Group, has identified the Seattle-Tacoma metropolitan region among the top 10 post-Christian cities in the U.S. Researchers surveyed individuals in a number of religious and spiritual practices and beliefs, and cities with the greatest number of respondents meeting 9 of 16 criteria qualified as post-Christian. Criteria included identifying as atheist or not attending church within the past year, and the questions were designed to evaluate the Christianness of respondents who still might indicate a Christian affiliation on less detailed surveys. The Charleston-Huntington, West Virginia metro area came in as the least post-Christian city surveyed in terms of 250 metro areas. So,
the least post-Christian, the least most current Christian.
I guess so, yeah. Okay. So I want to give you guys a little quiz, okay? We'll see how post-Christian you guys actually are. So number one, do not believe in God. Yes or no?
No.
Nope.
Okay, so no, you don't believe in God. That is true for you. You do not believe in God. Okay. Identify as atheist or agnostic.
Yes.
They kind of seem like if you don't believe in God, you're by default atheist, but maybe you might not identify that way. But okay. All right. So we'll give you that. Disagree that faith is important in your life. Hey, guys, is faith important in your life?
Well,
still don't know what faith is at this point. Like, it's just like faith has always been like something to justify without evidence. So, I mean, no.
Yeah, like that's explicitly what faith is belief without evidence, and I would like to have a little bit of evidence before I believe the thing.
And then by that time, it's no longer faith.
Oh, wait, are we supposed to be doing yes or no?
So, guys,
yes, I disagree that faith is important.
Okay, so to me, faith is only important in my life in the extent that it actually influences like laws and safety of other people, right? When you have like someone else's faith that is going
to... That's a good point.
So, but I think I would skew the results if I said that. Have you prayed to God in the last week?
No.
that God that you don't believe in because you're atheist?
I had some gas station sushi a couple of days ago, and
why would you do that?
So you had some utterances.
Why did you do that to yourself?
I am not a smart man.
So, have you ever made a commitment to Jesus?
Yes, when I was younger.
Okay, so
I used to be.
Okay, religious. So you have made a commitment to Jesus, but you no longer abide by this anymore, right?
Yeah, I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, the most
Josh, you baptized?
Not baptized, but made commitment to Jesus as a young moron, yes.
Okay. Is the Bible accurate? Agree or disagree?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, all those four-legged insects, right? You know, that's accurate, right?
Bats are birds.
Oh, yeah, bats are birds, I believe.
Pie is three.
Okay.
The earth is flat.
Pie is blueberry.
Have you donated money to a church in the last year?
I don't think so. I think there may have been a sort of religiously affiliated organization that was doing some good work, or maybe it was promoted by a religious organization, but it was about immigration on the border. I remember sending like a couple of bucks, but I can't quite remember if it was explicitly religious or not.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to say no, unless it's like the Church of Bacon.
Okay.
Church of Bacon.
Have you attended a Christian church in the last 6 months?
No.
Yes.
Was it a service?
It was a memorial.
Okay. So a memorial out of respect for the person who passed and the people who wanted to honor their life?
Yes.
Okay. All right. But not as a worshiper?
No.
Okay. Do you agree that Jesus committed sins?
Yeah. If the character Jesus certainly committed sins.
Okay, within a book.
Within a book.
I'm confused. I thought he was the guy who made the rules. How can he break his own rules?
I don't know, but...
If the rules conflict with each other, then you've, by definition, broken something.
So apparently, if you agree that Jesus commits sins, you are post-Christian, as long as you meet 8 other of these criteria. Do you agree... do you feel a responsibility to share your faith... The faith that you don't have.
I feel a responsibility to try and get people to understand that their faith is fine if they would just leave other people alone with it.
Okay, all right.
So if that can be taken as a statement of faith or me proselytizing atheism or secularism, then okay.
But Josh, do you feel a responsibility to share your faith?
No.
Okay. All right. And on Ask an Atheist, we've really always hewed to, we're not evangelizing and saying that people should be atheist. We want you to know that this is the way that many atheists think, yeah. And we don't always agree or have the same kinds of opinions on things, and we want to be left unencumbered by religious zealotry.
No, yeah, I want people to stop hurting people. That would be nice.
Okay, guys, have you read the Bible in the last week?
No. Yes.
Ooh. Wow. Well, I had to look up, you know, the Levitical laws that the preacher was talking about, right? Was it in a scriptural study sense?
No, absolutely not. It's a laugh at different passages.
The bats are birds, right?
You do a little bit of, Bible roulette.
Okay.
Bible roulette. You just pick a random spot and just, like, read the craziness.
Okay. Have you volunteered at a church in the last week?
No.
No.
Oh, post-Christian, guys. Have you attended Sunday school in the last week?
Does nope. this count? I learned things.
It's Sunday.
Hey, just because I'm a teacher and it's Sunday doesn't mean you're in Sunday school.
Okay, then no.
Have you attended a religious small group in the last week?
No.
Did you do your Bible study in someone's living room, guys?
No.
No, okay. And Bible engagement scale, where do you rank? Do you rank low or do you rank high? Now, Bible engagement scale is just a combination of two of our previous things. It means you haven't read the Bible in the last week, and you strongly disagree that the Bible is accurate.
Well, I've never proposed to the Bible, so I'm going to say non-existent.
Okay, so no Bible engagement scale. And, guys, are you born again?
No, I was born once.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I was only born the one time.
Oh, congratulations, guys! We're all post-Christian!
Yay.
Who saw that coming?
Now, here's a weird question that I have. I never grew up Christian. How do I contribute to the Seattle metro region being post-Christian? I grew up Jewish, right? And so all of these questions on whether I'm post-Christian, it's like...
You're just post-Christian by fiat. But you're pre-Christian and post-Christian.
Wait, so because the Jewish folks were yes. pre-Christianity. So
you're
post-Christian. I'm pre and post at the same time. What does that make me, guys? I mean...
A sandwich?
I don't want to say... I'm the bread. I'm the bread with Christianity in the middle? No, thank you.
No.
I think someone was joking that I was Schrodinger's Christian, both pre and post at the same time. I don't know whether... I like cat references, so if that's all right, then I'm good with that one. So I actually have a funny relationship with this because in the top 10 areas, these are marketing areas because it's a marketing group where people can buy this data. And if I want to start my own church, I want to say, all right, who is most post-Christian? How do I market to them? Why are they post-Christians? Because they don't read the Bible? Great. I'm going to form Bible study groups to try and get people to be all Christian. But here's your top 10 areas. The Springfield, Holyoke, Massachusetts area. Is the number one, and oh yeah, that's where I went to college. Okay, number two is Portland and Auburn, Maine. Number three, Providence, Rhode Island, and New Bedford, Massachusetts area. Number four, Burlington, Vermont. Some, you know, kind of cool presidential candidates coming from there. Number five, Boston, Massachusetts through Manchester, New Hampshire. Oh, live there too, guys. You got Albany, Schenectady, Troy. Hey, Justin.
That's where I'm from.
Yeah, you got some connection there.
No, oh, that's where I was. To clarify for people, I'm from New York. Lived in Florida before I moved here.
Oh, is that where you made your commitment to Jesus?
Yeah.
We got the Hartford, New Haven, Connecticut region. We got Rochester, New York. We got Santa Barbara, Santa Maria, and San Luis Obispo, California. Ooh, spent some time there when Dad was deployed at Vandenberg, was in active duty in Vandenberg. And number 10, coming in at number 10, it's us, Seattle and Tacoma, with a 54% rate of post-Christianness.
I don't know if I agree with this, though, because... the Pacific Northwest is actually known for being like one of the least religious areas in the country.
Well, it's least religious in general. And then you have a city that the whole framework of this is post-Christian. It's like as if Christianity was the baseline.
Yeah.
It's
well, that's what they think.
It's a bad baseline.
That's what they think. That's what they assume. They think
that's the
Christian
founding,
nation thing. Yeah,
the Christian nation thing. The deism of the founding fathers is getting somehow like manipulated into being Christianity. They think that this is they believe that we started from Christianity and then we're slowly declining.
Yeah. Never mind the fact that Jefferson made a Bible specifically cutting out all the magic out of it just to make it
right.
Oh, just to make it accurate?
Just to kind of make it
and the
represent
fact that
reality.
Jefferson had a Quran too.
Yeah, so whether you're post-Christian or not, I think that this kind of marketing is hilarious. And so whenever you see things on billboards or street preachers or new churches popping up. This is the kind of stuff that they're buying. They're buying this marketing data to see how to rope you in. You may be Christian. You may put Christian on any kind of ballot and things like that, or any kind of like a, you know, survey, but they don't think you're Christian enough. They think you're post-Christian.
Yeah.
Again, watering down someone else's ability to identify as they wish.
They're trying to expand their customer base.
Exactly. So I got a question that I've been asking our hosts and our co-hosts ever since Megan from Texas submitted it. And it's, what work of fiction best represents what you do or who you are? Josh, go.
Basically, I'd say the Bible.
What?
Yeah.
Who you are and what you do?
Well, it's what I do because I'm against it. So it kind of is the biggest work of fiction that actually drives me anyway, because it's something I have to fight against.
Okay, you're our first co-host that has talked about something in fiction that then motivates you and defines sort of parts of your life. So, you know, I guess, you know, I've been doing this running tally of, you know, most atheists aren't really motivated by religious things. And sometimes, in we have things that do have religious bents that sort of we identify with different characters. I appreciate your designation of the Bible as a work of fiction. Justin, work of fiction that best represents who you are or what you do.
You ever seen Roadhouse?
What?
No, I work as a bouncer, and in the cultural context of working in that kind of industry, the first half of that movie is exactly what you're supposed to do, and then the second half of that movie is exactly what you're not supposed to do.
Okay, so you use it as a primer for appropriate behavior.
That's kind of a joke answer. The serious answer would be like my if I was going to talk about like my politics, I'd say probably Cassandra.
Okay, say some more about that.
I listen to a lot of other perspectives, and I see what they're trying to do. The right wing is trying to do as far as like national politics in this country, and since I listen to them and I'm like in their heads, I know how they think, how they work, and what's coming next, and it leads me to say some things that are a little bit counterintuitive, and I haven't found a way to effectively communicate that so that people have my same perspective on what needs to be done.
Well, if you'd like to ask us a question and ask an atheist, you can email us questions@atheist.radio. You can tweet us @AskAnAtheistWA. Find us on Facebook at the same place. Thank you to Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield for our music every week. Thank you to the kids of Camp Quest for warning us about the dangers of snake oil salesmen. I mean, squid ink sales people. Thank you, Justin. And thank you, Josh.
You're welcome,
Becky.
We'll see you guys next week.